Hello, I'm Greg Johnston, and welcome to Imagining the Past. This series of podcasts were culled from sessions held during the 2019 Historical Novel Society Australasia Conference, held at the Parramatta campus of Western Sydney University on the 26th and 27th of October, 2019. The podcasts were made from live microphone feeds. This session was titled The Silver Screen, Scriptwriting and Adaptations. More and more historical novels are being adapted for screen with lavish production values and high-profile stars. What is the secret to writing scripts compared to books? How do scriptwriters condense intricate plots into a few hours' screen time while maintaining complexity of characters and themes? What elements are producers searching for when considering a story? And are compromises needed when wooing an audience compared to a readership? Jesse Blackadder, Marla Nunn, and Myra Robinson discuss with Kelly Gardner the different approaches required when writing novels, adaptations, and screenplays.
So my first question really is to just talk us through whether or not you see any obvious differences in your approach to different forms or different ways of working between, say, fiction, say, writing a novel and writing for the screen. Will I start with you, Jessie?
You can start with me. I had a very interesting experience. I have been on an arts fellowship. I spent last summer in Antarctica with a TV screenwriter, and we went as a team. So it was really, it was like an action research project in the different ways of working. And here's what I can tell you about it. You know, working as a novelist, you go into the inner world. And in fact, for me, I need quiet, and that quiet is real life quiet and also mental quiet, to hear that little tiny voice of the novel. Like, I really need that. And what I found is that TV writers talk a lot. And that is actually their idea-generating mechanism. Like, that is what they do. They talk through. So, okay, so then, right, we're going to put them in this room, and I don't know, so then, I know, what about if they do this? And that's kind
so they're
of how
bouncing
they
off
think.
One another.
They're bouncing off one another and the walls and what often I think goes on quietly in a novelist's mind comes out of their mouth instead. So it was fascinating to see those two different approaches and to really understand how different they are. But Jane and I decided to use that approach to plot our middle grade adventure novel for kids set in Antarctica. So middle grade is ages 8 to 12. So we just sat there in a room for 6 weeks with index cards talking, which I would get to the end of the day and I felt like my, you know, ears were bleeding and my eyeballs were falling out. And I think for Jane it was just another day at the office, you know. So it was a great education in the different ways of working. I think I came back feeling that my natural habitat is the kind of quiet space of the novel, but I loved that opportunity of thinking differently about it.
Thank you. And Mira, you've gone the other way around, haven't you, after lots and lots of years working collaboratively and on screen.
Yeah.
Finally, not that anybody was waiting for years, she wrote a novel.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting just hearing what Jessie said. And I mean, there's so many things you could say, but I'll just pick up one thing that for me, I have mainly worked as a screenwriter in independent film, both collaboratively co-writing and also on my own, and then novel writing. So, and I think the big difference for me about novel, or one of the differences about novel and screenwriting in terms of film, is the way in which you have an idea for a film, and in order to get development money, so in order to be paid to write, you have to basically flesh that out in some way. And normally that means you have to write some sort of treatment, in other words, a present tense sort of present tense prose narrative in shorthand form, really, of what the film is going, of what that screenplay is going to be. So you have to do that document, and then you if you're lucky, if it's good enough, you'll get a tranche of money to start that process. My experience of writing a novel is obviously, which I think is more typical of a novelist, is that you don't really know what it is that you're writing, and it's in the writing of it that you find out. That is a very torturous but interesting process, and I really, I hated it, but I loved it too, because there was a tremendous freedom about it. And the other process makes you kind of a bit plot-driven, because you have to sort of work out what the story is. And often, of course, then when you've got the money for the screenplay and you start writing, you discover, well, that was all bullshit, doesn't even work, and so you sort of have to go back. But it is this different process, and when and given that I've been working in film for a long time, I both, as I say, I loved, but did find it torturous, this other way of working, which is a deeper way, really, because you don't know what it is. And when I say that, you don't know thematically. Well, that's my experience. I didn't know thematically what I was working with for a long time. So you have to go down a lot of highways and byways. I've had to go down a lot of highways and byways when writing a novel, because you don't always find, you know, you can go off on a course of action that sort of turns out to not be relevant. That happens too with the screenplay, but as I say, you start from a very different place. You have to work out a whole lot of things beforehand. I mean, there's a million different ways of talking about this question, but that's just one thing.
Well, I started out in film, mostly sort of running around film sets and helping actors do whatever, and making copies. So I was a very film person. The first couple of things I ever wrote were screenplays. They were all bad, but I wrote them. They're still in a drawer somewhere, hopefully waiting, for a day where they'll find life. But so I found the difference was that film's incredibly collaborative. And my husband's a film producer, and what you find with film is that they make magic, but it's really expensive magic. You don't want to be mucking around with this magic, because if it doesn't work, there's a huge amount of money that flies out the door. If I write a scene that doesn't work, I've lost 2 days. Bad me. But really, my publisher's not paying me more or less because I screwed the middle bit up that I had to rewrite. So a film tends to have a kind of a visceral energy about it that's all about making stuff now, creating now, and also the whole idea of being in a room and having to discuss in a kind of a round table situation the best idea. So it's much more directed. You're right, it's much more directed in a way. And what I find novels are, for me anyway, I know people that are very centered, but it just feels like it's less so, that I can be in my own head more. And sometimes my kids will hear me talking in the room and they go, "You barely talk to us. Who are you talking to?" I'm like, "Who do you think? The people in my head." So I don't feel like I'm all by myself all the time, but I do notice that with film and TV. I mean, it's just this big machine, and there's hundreds of people involved. And also, if you screw up this, if the screenplay then goes out, and it's this big job where loads of people get to work, actors, producers, everything else. So it's kind of a bigger field in a way. You're on a bigger playing field than just you and your story.
Yeah,
and they both have got a real magic to them. They're just different kinds of magic.
So just on a practical level, Mira, could you just extend that explanation of what the process is? Because it takes a long time to get a film made, even if it does get made. Could you just quickly explain from that bit where you have the idea, you do the treatment?
Okay, so there are different ways it might happen, because you might be commissioned to write a screenplay, and it might be an adaptation of a novel, or it might be that somebody, a producer, has an idea, actually, for a story that they sort of know the bare outline of, and they might want you to actually be the one that develops that idea, or you might have your own idea. So let's say from wherever it is, there's an idea floating around, and be it an adaptation or an original thing or from a true story, the normal process would be that you would write some sort of treatment, and in some cases, if you have no credits to your name, you would actually have to write a whole first draft before you go to a funding body, be it Screen Australia or Film Victoria or Create New South Wales, or a private company, private production company, to get that funding to write the first draft. You write the first draft, it might fall over at that point, it might fall over, you might get a second draft. You're probably these days only going to get probably three, maybe four lots of development money before, and at that point you would be expected to have a final draft. Even, and when we say drafts, you're doing a million drafts to get to a draft, if you know what I mean. It's not like, oh yeah, whip off a draft and then it's done. That might be like a lot of drafts before
like
you go.
Like years?
Well, 6 months? It used to be, everything has speeded up now because people used to have scripts in development with the funding bodies, with the, you know, like Screen Australia or whatever, for years. Yeah. But actually, that's no longer the case. If you can't deliver it, you know, a draft in, say, 3-4 months that has shown genuine progress and looks like a goer, then, you know, it'll be dropped. So, you know, the sort of turnaround has definitely sort of shortened in terms of getting that through to a final stage. But once you've got your script in a really good state, and let's say that the producer agrees that it's fantastic, maybe there's already a director on board and everybody is happy with the script, you've then got to get some millions of dollars to make the film. And that's where things can... that's where things have become more and more difficult. Yeah. And just as a general rule, I would say that what has actually happened over the last 5-6 years is that the middle has kind of hollowed out. So very, very tiny micro-budget films can get up, but everybody is subsidising that process. Nobody is getting paid properly, and really it's sort of a labour of love, and usually done by early career people in order to get something there that they can parlay into, you know, for their future careers. And then at the other end, there's, for Australia, quite big budget films where you've got to have an international cast. So you've got to have, you know, Joel Edgerton, Kate Blanchett, Naomi Watts, somebody who means something on the international sort of scale. So from that point of view, film has become really... from an Australian sort of national cinema perspective, very, very difficult, and it's really I'm not working in that field anymore because it doesn't function properly anymore. So a lot of people like me and a lot of directors have moved into TV because the opportunities are greater in TV, and really if you just think about the last Australian film you went to see. I don't know. I mean, what would it be?
Ride Like a Girl.
Yeah, like yeah. Girl. So there'll be one or two of those kind of films that sort of, you know, are popular kind of films. They have a bigger budget. In that case, it's based on a known true story, and that gets up. But there's more than... It's not that films aren't being made, Australian films aren't being made, but they are literally under the radar. And I just don't even see the point of them in a lot of cases, because they're not, nobody sees them. Nobody makes any money. You have to finance them yourself. It's a kind of crazy scenario. So really all the creative energy is really moving in a lot of ways out of film and into TV at this point in time. At some point, someone will work out how to make films make money again, and then there'll be a surge and it'll all start.
So it comes and goes, I guess,
comes
over
and
the years.
Yeah, at the moment, sure. It's kind of gone.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas TV was in a slump a little while ago. So it's not a depressing story.
Yeah.
So it's all the fabulous TV you've seen lately.
There's always doors. Some doors close and other doors open. And as I said, it's not actually that films aren't being made, and actually really good films, but there's sort of no mechanism for them to get an audience because they are up against... directly up against, in a way, Hollywood. So there's, you know, actually being English language speaking is almost is a disadvantage, in a weird kind of way.
One of the things I was wondering about too, that I thought people here might be interested in, everybody who's got a novel here will be thinking, what if somebody wanted to adapt my beautiful book for the screen? And I know you've been thinking about adapting your stuff, and Mira's worked on a few adaptations as well. And have you thought about adapting?
No, my detective series got optioned, and it's now it's in that sort of
development hell.
Yeah, exactly. And I was actually offered. They said to me, "Do you want to do the treatments?" And it's going to be a 3-series treatment. And I actually looked at it and I thought, I've got no idea what I'm doing. I can't do that.
So that's a different
task altogether, because it was for TV, it was never for film. And it's right, because there's much more opportunity in television now with so many different streaming services. So I looked at that and I actually thought, I'm not up to it. I'm not familiar enough with the language of television. If it had been a screenplay, I could have gone, I think I can deal. But there is a point where you come up against your own shortcomings. And that was it. So I had to let that go to another writer who did it, an English guy in Hollywood who works in TV did it.
Is that because there are all these invisible sort of structural things in the forms that are different, or is it a completely different skill set, do you think, writing across those different forms?
Well, I think TV is... It's so enormously complex, just in terms of especially television. I mean, not screenplays sometimes do the same thing, but like what novels I find as a novelist is that it's very hard to get in front of an audience. So even readers to me are an audience, and they are just sucking down content like we've never sucked down content in history before. It's coming into their homes. It's about murder. It's about this, and it's just this great array of things that people can choose from. And it is a different form, and that's one of the reasons why if you do television, there's 8 people in the room. How do you keep ahead of the audience? So they get 8 people, and they talk. So they get to a point where they feel there's...
And they pay someone money to write down what they're saying on the day. That's pretty funny.
Oh, so tell us what it's like in a writer's room.
Well, I'm really interested in film, and I studied film in my undergrad degree. So for me, it was a bit like, would I go into film or writing or... become a vet like I thought I was going to be. So I've sort of revisited film and TV in the last few years, and part of that revisiting was going, what do you do as an apprentice? What do you do to get to learn this form? And one of the things you can do is you generally volunteer to sit in a writer's room and be the note taker, which is actually quite a skilled task.
Yeah.
It takes quite a lot of skill to get down, not just verbatim what everybody says, but the key things, and then present it in a coherent way. Because you can imagine with 8 people speaking all day, there's an uproar. So actually that was quite a challenging task to be a note taker, and good note takers are very prized in the industry. So even to get in at that ground floor to be the note taker, coffee maker, dish picker upper is very competitive. But as a note taker, you get to see how people think, and you get to see the process. And I think one of the things that I liked about watching screenwriters at work is they figured out ways of dealing with shame. So, you know, for most of us, when we have a stupid idea, like, thank God, no one ever sees it or hears it. But with them, because they're saying it out loud 2 seconds after they've thought of it, they have to find a way to deal with the shame of all the stupid ideas, the 100 stupid ideas that are going to come out of your mouth before one good one. And Jane taught me this fantastic one, which was the sock puppet. I don't know if you have come across this, but, you know, you're sitting there and you're all really important and clever and you go, OK, here's the sock puppet version, and you might actually put on one. So how about they go along to the train and then they get on the train and then the train blows up? And it's sort of a way that you can say the first dumb idea that's come into your head. And if everyone else thinks it's dumb, it's like, yeah, because it was only the sock puppet idea, so that's all right. Or some people go, the train blowing up, excellent idea, and the sock puppet can smile, and then you could own that idea. What was the question? I got carried away. Yeah, the sock puppet.
What was it like to be in the writer's room?
So that's what it was like. It was like it was so fast and so quick. Mm. The first room I was in, there was, I think, 12 people, and most of them were very, very funny people. So it was... And they just tell stories a lot of the time too. Like, it's often not to do with the topic. Mm. So this was for a youth drama series that had comedy elements. So people started talking about when they were kids, what they felt like when they were 13 and trying to go on a date. And then out of this rambling sort of thing, it's very organic, and out of this organic rambling process... things start to coalesce.
And can you feel when they start to coalesce?
Yeah, I think so. Like usually somebody at that point will start writing things on the blackboard,
right,
or the whiteboard, you know, and they'll start saying, OK, so we're starting to get some beats, and then you begin to get a sense of things are starting to hang together. But it's a real house of cards, and, you know, at the end of the day, if someone pulls out one thing and says, hang on a minute, what about this, the entire thing can collapse. Right. So it's like you're building out of fairy floss.
That's
kind of a funny experience.
So it's a completely different process to writing to film. I mean, which in my experience, even when I've collaborated, is a much more, you know, in process terms, it's actually more akin to writing a novel.
Right.
You know, and I have not written directly for TV, but I've now been involved in two recent shows as a script exec. And so you're in the room and you're doing all that work, and luckily then you go away and make the writers write it, and then you critique it, basically.
That's the best job.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of responsibility, though, in that job too, you know, which is sort of daunting. But, yeah, I mean, I think such a good point that you're making, Jesse, that this way of being able to say things and allow yourself to say dumb things, because it is really out of the dumb things that the good things come. But you've got to do that on your own when you're much more on your own, when you're writing a novel or when you're
which is much more comfortable, let's face it, to just think dumb things is okay. But
But it does generate ideas. Sometimes I kind of do think, oh, gee, I'd like a room for my novel, but then I want all the glory or the, you know, I don't want to share that. Because it might not be glory.
Well, what dim glory there is.
But that does bring up the idea of what you relinquish, you know. So you have this team and you collaborate, but what you relinquish is the authorial, this is mine. You know,
but you do and you don't, because like, for example, in the things that I've been working on, which are four-part series, in the end, one writer will get the credit for... some writers will never even... who have been in the room will not be credited at all. They were just sort of fodder in the early stages of, you know, kind of coming up with ideas. But, you know, individual writers do get the credits.
Just that idea about, you know, whose idea it is, but also how you have to let it go, just because Mira... was involved in the adaptation of Christos Tsolkas's Loaded, which became Head On. And so there you've got a process of Christos handing over to you, here is my novel, do with it what you will. And then you worked on it with a couple of other people.
Yeah.
But then, so I'd love to hear about a bit more about that. But also then when it's a script and you have to hand it over to the filmmaker,
the director,
this case, who was also...
my partner, as it happens.
As it happens, but also had co-written it. But then they go into production. Are the writers still involved at that point? Or do you then... And then you've got the actors, so, you know, one person can change an entire meaning of a scene with their performance. So how do you handle that? Oh, this is my beautiful idea. It was so good. do with it what you will.
Okay, well, in that particular case, I mean, I'm a believer, because I've lived with a director, for a film director, and she's a writer as well, a film writer, for a long time. But I do adhere to the idea that film is a director's medium, and that the director has to have a vision and is the one that should see that vision through. Even if they're not the writer, they should have some involvement in working with the writer to make sure that they're on the same, you know, plane, if you like, and that right through to editing and beyond, all the post-production, that the director's vision is really important. Now, there's lots of films that are no longer done that way, where the American kind of model has come in, not the American auteur model, but the American kind of model of, like, we will segment everything up in a sort of capitalist kind of fashion and get the most out of everybody doing just one bit and then you do the next bit, blah, blah, blah. But I think the best films do have that vision of the director. And as a writer for film, I'm really happy with that. If you're working with a director who you respect and you think that they've got the goods, you know, that they've got the chops to do it. And in that sense, actually, it's fantastic, because they are going to also... hopefully honour the script and do their best for that script. And even if it isn't exactly how you thought it would be, you know, it's going to be amazing. I mean, when the very first film that I did with Anna, was called Only the Brave, and it was a short feature. It was 60 minutes. And when I actually finally saw it, I was just blown away because actually it was nothing like how I had imagined it. But it my version of it quickly dissipated into the ether, and it just became what was now on the screen.
And it was beautiful.
It was amazing.
Has anybody seen it?
Beautiful. Oh. Yeah. I mean, but I sort of saw it really differently in my head when I was co-writing that banner. It was completely different. Mm. But so I think the director's the leader, the visionary, and that's great. Now, that doesn't always, work out, I guess, but I think I've been lucky, largely.
So that means there's in all these processes you've described, there's an incredible amount of trust. Creative vision, and trusting one another's creative vision. Have you ever seen it go wrong? You can name names if you like.
No, I was saying I have a friend who's got a big release coming up in January. He's a screenwriter. And he gave me the novelization of the film that's going to be coming out in a couple of months. And I said, oh, this is amazing. And he was like, yeah. The only thing he loved about writing the novel is that he knew that the director couldn't come and change anything. That's what he loved about it, because he'd had a thing on the screenplay where he'd go and he would see four things that he thought were fundamentally important ideas, and then they weren't being enacted, but he was there. By that point, he was just the writer, right? And nobody wants the writer on set, because you're going to mope around because you had a great idea and now it's gone. So directors are pretty much like, go away. This is my show.
So that's a different relationship to what Mira is describing.
So for him, he felt like he'd got this director had gotten this script and essentially threw it up in the air and thought, oh, it's kind of landed. And he said he sees the film and he hates it. Hates every minute of it. Other people say, hey, it's actually pretty good. He goes, no, it's not. Hmm. So for him, he actually came to write the novel and absolutely loved it because he knew nothing could be changed. Yeah, so that's when the process can actually go wrong for the writer.
I think that's pretty common.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I think in a way, my experience has been a bit unusual.
It's true.
Actually.
They just got to have a relationship with the director, really.
Pro tip.
That's right.
Which
marry the director
you
and you're sorted.
You may have to have a bit of serial monogamy or not, or just polygamy going on. I don't know. Yeah.
Can we just talk then a little bit about, because Mira was saying about the funding and how things have gone, dried up a lot and how hard it is. Just a few home truths about, for people in the room like me who may have this dream of the $1 million option of one of my books, and then
can I just ask, is there anyone who doesn't have the dream of their work? thank you, excellent. Okay, so we have the
you're getting right. Some sort of
prize. You hold just the tissues, the rest of us are about to weep.
just wanted to get it sort of,
and I would wake up one morning and there would be an email, there'd be $1 million, not from a gentleman in Nigeria but from my sub agent in Hollywood. We've cast Cate Blanchett and as your main character, whoever it might be, I don't care which book it is, and the check's in the mail. So how likely, team, is that going to be? Not just for me, but for everybody in this room.
Except
you, who doesn't care.
You'll probably get it.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I was thinking.
And when that happens, you have to invite all of us to opening night. Is it going to happen for me? Anybody else? No.
Okay.
I'm taking that as a no.
I have known people that it has happened for.
There you go.
Absolutely. A friend of mine wrote a two-part series in Canberra, still works for the Transport Commission. Stars, he got the, hey, we read your books, we love them. And he was like, seriously? And they said yes. So his Facebook feed for about 2 weeks was him in LA with a stunned look on his face with movie stars going, it's me, but I still work for the Transport Commission. So it does absolutely happen. This is the magic. This is what we all want to hang on to, because it does. It's happened to a number of friends of mine now. And other people who've kind of swapped from doing playwriting to doing movies and had them be really successful, other people have had fabulous properties, absolutely fabulous properties, have been optioned and that it's just gone down the drain. So it's a house card. You've got to play your hand.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't know. You might get that.
There you go. The dream is not dead.
It's not dead.
It's not dead. All right. And
can I say one thing about that? Because you were talking about the options. Mostly, if something gets optioned, you won't get a lot of money for the option.
Not the option.
What you get a lot of money for is if it goes into production. That's when you do make, get a nice fat check. So the option, especially in the Australian context, might be honestly very, very low. It could be a dollar. It could be $1,000. It's probably not going to be much more than that, for a three-year option or something like that.
So that email actually is spam.
Yeah, that one is spam. Right. Yeah. And once it's been optioned, then an awful lot of stuff does get optioned. And then it just starts to winnow down and down and down, and only a very few things actually will get developed and then go on to production.
So this tiny percentage gets, in the end, made.
Yeah.
Though some get through development.
Yes. Yeah, some might
script development.
But that won't give the writer of the original material anything more. It's just the option fee is to allow that development to happen.
Okay, so...
But it does happen, as you said.
It happens.
Yeah. All right, we're all right with that?
Yeah.
We can live with that uncertainty for the rest of our lives?
Yeah.
Just keep checking your spam folder, okay?
I hope you've enjoyed this discussion. If you would like to know more about the Historical Novel Society Australasia and our numerous activities to promote reading and writing historical fiction, please visit our website, www.hnsa.org.au. There you'll also find full biographies of our podcast participants under the tab News and Interviews. I'm Greg Johnston, and thank you for listening to this podcast.